now?
We're working now.
Gotta quit playing.
Hey, you can keep playing.
Irish like, lock flies.
I think you can talk and tie at the same time. I've seen a couple videos. Welcome back to episode 58 of the Slide In Podcast. I'm Braden Anderson. That is Kelly Gallup.
Welcome back to the new year.
Everybody started calling me Barton, Garner, and Samsonite.
Yes.
Because of that
clip. I knew that was going to stick.
Yeah, it's spread like wildfire. So I find it to be very funny. Yeah, new year. We never did like a best of the previous year, whatever.
Because you weren't that good.
Yeah.
I couldn't pick one. I couldn't pick a highlight.
No, not talking about me. I know we could do a worst of for me. That'd be a lengthy list. Why don't we
Back, by the way?
What's that?
Is your voice back? You still sound a little.
It sounds like it's changing every week. I don't know.
I'll have to call
when I ask
Howard and have him ask Lucy. One she's
Lucy's
like, which one that she likes the best.
She's the
you can try to mimic it.
Official voice, whatever, orator of the Slide In Podcast. Yeah, I talked to my surgeon and he's like, yeah, you know, for the first few weeks it can be really high and squeaky and then it might return to normal and then it might change. So who cares, whatever. Hopefully it isn't nails on a chalkboard for all of our good listeners. Why don't we start looking back at the stuff we filmed in 2025, which I'm massively behind on editing that stuff. I'm stuck on one show that I
hate. Fishing shows?
Yeah, I hate the show I'm working on right now. Just
was it my breath?
No. Well, you did burp into your mic a couple times, made me want to vomit. Have we told that story when we were down in Chile and we
told the one of me going off the porch and head her in the rock.
Yeah. Kelly found a rock with his head. And he tripped a little. Well, you had a torn calf and a couple bottles of wine. And
the calf didn't help.
Calf gave out on the stairs on the way down, and you moved a rock about, I don't know, 4 feet.
I saw it the next morning.
It was a big rock.
I was trying to get back.
Yeah.
I was trying not to hit the ground. Didn't go down. Yeah. I think I did.
Yeah, so the next morning we're out filming. Of course, we're on like a wavy lake, you know, nasty crossing getting over there. And I'm talking about two totally different days. Okay, let's forget first day. This was the last day we were filming. I think we were with Miles on the big river that had that big checkerboard weed flat. It was Joe Brooks' book.
No, it's the Food of La Flu.
Yeah, the Food of La Flu. Food of La Flu. We were on that, and Kelly and I didn't know it at the time, but we were both like coming down with a nasty sickness.
Well, we kind of knew it. I'd been sick. Well, we didn't. We thought it was allergies. Everybody said, because we were all popping allergy pills, including the entire staff.
Right,
the entire staff was popping allergy. And it was like they'd always come out at the same time, and everybody was, so we were sure, but it was some funky flu.
Pause this for a sec. I'm not sure I lined up this camera, and I have no idea if we're both in this shot or not. All right, we are. We're good. Cool. It's good podcasting.
There he goes. That's why he gets paid the big money. And I'm supposed to watch that little tiny screen
somebody's
over there
getting
tell paid. Him if something goes wrong.
I can see it, too. Okay, so we're
on the... I wish we had a camera over here because I'm always looking at you. I should be looking at that because I don't care about you.
Nobody cares about me.
So anyway, you're sick and you're whining about...
Yeah, so Kelly and I, we're both like feeling bad. That was a horrible travel back to the U.S. Remember we missed our flight in Dallas?
We didn't miss it. It was too cold and the freaking doors on the tram froze.
Yeah,
And we're at C and got to get to A and
it was like 70 gates.
It's only like a mile.
Yeah. So I sprinted through the airport. Kelly's got like a quarter of a knee.
And I don't run.
And you
and my calf.
You did your best Earl Thomas impression on a woman walking out of a store, just clobbered some gal who walked out as we were hustling through the airport. Missed our flight. It was all mess.
I apologize.
Yeah. So remember we did a tour of the TGI Fridays of the Dallas airport.
That was the highlight.
Yeah. That helped the headache. But we were both ill. But so we're getting sick this day. And, you know, we think it's allergies, but I'm feeling terrible. Like, I didn't drink the two nights before this.
That was your problem.
That probably was my
problem.
Would
have cured it.
But I just remember being on that boat going upstream, and I'm wearing the headphones, right, that are attached to Kelly's mic and Miles's mic. This is Miles Marquez, if you guys don't know. Great guide for BSA and down in Chile. And
is he still down there?
I actually don't know.
I don't think he went back. He didn't go back to the.
Yeah, I think you're. I'm not sure he did.
None of them did.
I saw him a fair bit this summer, but yeah. So we're rolling upstream, and I just start feeling like I'm gonna puke. Like I just feel ill. I'm kind of like salivating, you know, trying to find somewhere on the shore to have a constant viewpoint so I'm not getting nauseous. And then I hear Kelly just unleash the like deepest burp directly into his mic and it goes straight into my eardrums. I started gagging.
God, if I'd only known.
Oh, God. I was just like, hey, got that out. And I realized I could take my headphones off, so that helped. Where were we going with that?
We weren't. You were.
Yeah, that's fair.
I have no idea. Highlights of 2025.
Highlights of 2025. Okay.
So making you puke.
Making me puke. My highlight of 2025 of what we filmed was that fish on the Henry's Fork above Ashton.
That was a good one.
That just like
that was a tough day. That, so yeah, it was kind of fun that all went together.
Yeah. It was cool. Cause it, you know, we like worked a process, right? We're doing the color changes. We
started with a plan, which is always bad.
Yes. The plan
I was
work.
Going to fish small crayfish. Jigging crayfish all day,
right?
Because I knew they'd come on with a little bit of water temp bump. But
I also think one of the most valuable things that I got out of the, you know, that show that you said that may get passed over, in that spring fishing when you've got snow on the banks, mm-hmm. that temperature bumps and you're like, oh, this would be great. The water's gonna
ambient
warm up.
Temperature,
right?
Bumps
the air temperature bumps.
Yes.
But the water temperature can drop because all that snow melt starts
drops
going in can
very quickly.
Off. Yeah.
As soon as it drips.
Especially, yeah. You know, we were below the warm spring fed mm-hmm. creek there, right? So our water temp's theoretically higher than they should have been if this is a freestone or close right. to a dam. And so, you know, air temperature goes up, you're getting warmer, you're taking off jackets, the fish might be putting them on. I thought that was really valuable. I'd never heard anybody say that before.
For a while, it doesn't last all day. It can moderate, you know, it can even out. But
interesting. I never went back to look at the gauge, but I'd never heard someone say that before and thought that was really interesting. So I thought that was a good tip.
I don't know. The highlight for me, just because it's funny, I found this. I was at trying to. Chris has got this knack for finding books that are just so valuable. And he finds them at the same place. And that it's the nearly new. And he's found.
He's going to be so mad we're airing out his secrets.
Well, they don't have any more because he gets them all.
No, he does get them all. Good luck. Chris is determined on something. Yeah,
he's made his 2K.
Yes.
You know, on two books. But I walked in there and I score Anatomy of a Fisherman, first edition, for a buck. It's not really a collectible book, right? It's really it's Trevor, it's just Volkow. It's always because he's from Michigan and so I'm reading his book and he's got all the, he's a guy, I just love how he writes. And he says, I've fished with all types of men and I've yet to find one who can make fishmen bite when they don't want to. And I'm like, God, I just love that.
It's a nail right on the head. That's
and so I don't know. My favorite eat was, well, that I didn't see it, but that one on the sheep herder was pretty cool. But that was personal because nobody else saw it except me. We weren't filming. We didn't catch it on film. We didn't.
Yeah.
I just watched it.
In the back of the boat and you just start, oh my.
Yeah, that was the coolest thing. Yeah. But it wasn't a giant fish or anything. It just was such a great. But I'm pretty sure that show with Bill Money, that when he gets that big fish, and I'm certain that I had that fish eat because our stuff is, and I'm like, oh God, I just got crashed.
Yeah.
And it's not. Seconds later, and he's got it. but I got to see it the whole Eat.
Yeah.
Again,
yeah.
I mean, I love the Eat, right?
Yeah,
you know,
the,
the rest of it's just holding on for a minute and reeling it, who cares? But when you get to see a 10-pound fish eat a fly, but his was a lure, but it doesn't matter. I don't care. That was just a personal for me. I mean, I'm not even sure if the rest, I don't know if we got the Eat on film. I know we got Bill leaning into it. But
it's on that 360 GoPro that was up mm-hmm. on the tower, and you don't like really see the Eat because they're so camouflaged and that doesn't have a polarizer right. on it. But
I mean, I looked down his face.
It turned upside down, and that's when you see the white belly, and on that camera, it's just like,
yeah.
Oh, that's him.
I saw it.
Yeah.
Eat it, right?
Yeah,
and I'm like, shit. That was mine. Give it back.
Yeah, that was a fun one. There's so much good back and forth between you and Bill. And they're like, you know, Bill catches two little fish. You get a big one. And you're like, I would never tell Bill I caught a bigger fish than you. And then 2 minutes later, Bill gets an even bigger fish. And he goes, I would never tell Cal. And my favorite line is as soon as we release that fish, and you were not saying it to the camera. I just happened to be recording the ground when you went back up to the front of the boat. And I think you were saying it to yourself. I don't think anybody else could hear it. You said, you know, there's a 10-pounder coming today.
Oh, yeah.
I just put the audio over some random B-roll. It's in the show.
Yeah.
I could be wrong. Maybe it was. Maybe you
just turned
camp,
so quick after 2.5 days of total suffering.
Yes. Pain and suffering.
It's total. And you knew there was going to be a window when no one can make it happen. It just happens.
Yes.
It was. It's funny. I was watching one of the Millhouse podcast. I actually talked to Nikki last night, but somebody was talking about bite windows, and he said, you know, you just got to wait. You just got, it might've been Roland. I can't remember. But you just got to wait.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, that was good highlights.
There was
a bunch. I'd have to go back. I don't remember any of them.
You remember where you picked me up that morning?
I was about to say there should be a highlight reel of you getting thrown out by that chick and walking home, and I have to go find you walking down the road with a cup of coffee.
No, I didn't even have coffee.
Did you have coffee? No, I had the coffee. I brought you a cup of coffee. You got to come get me. Oh, God.
I called Kelly at 6 a.m. I was walking across a dam in the lane. Kelly had to come pick me up. That was only like three miles from our Airbnb.
That would have been a highlight, right? Real.
That was a funny night. No, I still remember that gal's, the bartender's cousin. That guy had two brain cells and they're both fighting for third place. Remember him?
Oh, man.
Poor guy.
That would have been a better highlight. That whole night would have been a highlight.
That was a riot. that was good fun. Yeah.
All right. Onward to the show.
Onward to the show.
Well, better highlights next year.
I got
to film the next time he gets kicked out by some tramp.
Gal's a little nutty. So I connected the dots on an experience we had recently. I was telling this story to a buddy who I ski instruct with. It was the day that Hardy was out filming with us, and I was I think it might have been the day before. I was in the back of the boat filming. You're rowing, and Howard Croston, world champion fly angler, is in the front of the boat. We're coming down towards the Ruby put-in, and from a, you know, maybe 200 yards away, 300 yards away, we see two guys fishing down there, and they just look like they're hungover. They're standing in the same place, and they're just making the same cast over and over and over again, right? And just, they're kind of like looking at each other and talking. And I'm like, yeah, look at these fucking guys. And then one guy gets his rig stuck up in the tree, and as we get closer, he spends like, do you remember this?
No.
He spends like 2 minutes just looking up at the tree like this, just pulling on his rig, trying to get it out. And the other guy's like, I don't think it's going to work. He goes, I'll pull on it a few more times. And I'm ad-libbing for, I don't know what they're saying. This is what it looked like, right? And then we get closer, and Howard, you know, he's very funny, very quick, witty, and he's got a great accent. He's just roasting these guys. You're roasting them as we're coming down. And, as we get closer, I'm like, I don't know if I should say his name. I will. I was like, Danon? He goes, oh my God, is that Braden? I'm like, yeah. And the other guy's Finn, another guy I ski instruct with. I couldn't imagine like the embarrassment of them knowing it's Kelly Gallup and Howard Crosston in a boat together, watching just completely fuck around and be complete idiots on the side of the river. We had a good laugh when we connected the dots on that. Yeah.
And one of those at Trout Camp, there's 84, I think. All kinds of things happened at that. Mike Craig got, he was 36 hours in a coma, basically alcohol-induced coma, which we thought he might be dead, but it seemed like he was breathing. But, oh, my God, just all kinds of, it's, you know, it's Steelhead Camp, it says we're Steelheaders go for head. It's all guys. That ain't good. And so we get up, man up, you know, every morning and just go out and it's a tiny little river and wade around or drive somewhere, whatever. I went downstream about 300 yards. There were so, it's more fish than I've ever seen in my life in a river. It was obnoxious. I'd look down and it's not like a stocker river. It's all wild. Everything, there's no plants ever. And I look down at my feet and I'm like, oh shit, I must have been there a while because nothing's afraid. They're planted. There's a steelhead by my foot, little one, about 6 pounder. And I take my fly and I look down and I go like that and I throw it up and I still get a hold of my line. And he goes, eats. And I go, and he takes off and I go, oh shit. And I just sat on the log jam and just let it go. Yeah, right? Popped it off, right? I fell asleep on the log jam.
No shit.
Yeah, I think Walt Grouse, somebody came up and goes, what are you doing? I said, just sitting here. But yeah, lots of that. It's happened to everybody.
Yep. All right, let's jump into a question. This one comes from Brett Schultz on YouTube. He says, enjoy all your podcasts. If you haven't seen Outlaw Josie Wales, watch it soon.
He's talking to you.
Yeah.
Oh.
I need to watch it. I've been busy. One of the best.
That was a general statement. Like, I was included.
Well, he might be saying that to all of our the people who read the comments too.
Yes.
By the way, we love
YouTube comments.
I didn't
know there was somebody else that hadn't seen it.
So if you have thoughts, please leave them because they help us come up with new material for the show. And while I can talk a lot.
Until we can get some other people in here.
I'm not that creative. Yeah, we need to plan these days longer in advance. I mean, I just came off a long stretch of ski instructing, so it's...
We're just... Do your job.
Hey, I'm saying we're doing a good job of getting these in so we can continue with our schedule, but we'll actually plan in the future. That's my job. He says, yeah, watch that movie. It's one of the best. The timing of his tobacco spats are legendary. Quick question. I fly fish the Spring Creeks of the Driftless area... have for 45 years. For the last several seasons, during our early catch and release season, I've spent most of my time swinging streamers on light tackle. On an average day, I hook up about 40% of the time. A good day is in the 60 to 70% range. Any tips on increasing the hooking percentage? Thanks, Brett from Wisco. I'd like to supplement this question before you jump in on it. 40% on an average day, 60% on a good day. Is that normal? Is that
good? Sounds great to me.
Is it bad? And then jump into what can we do to increase those rates?
If he's swinging, I think that's spectacular. I mean, even if you're not swinging, if you're stripping or jigging, whatever you're doing, I mean, think about it. How many hits you get a day as opposed to how many. I was just watching highlights of the classics, Bassmasters, and watching... Oh, I got a hit. Oh, dang it. I got a hit. Oh, shit. You know, and you think, but they don't show all that, right? But if you think of a daily, it's on a streamer or, a swung fly. You want to see that really. When you swing wet flies, the number of taps you get, like in my Cripples and Spinners book, I showed how to do a slip strike. You know, that was when I was a child, my dad... You know, because you're kind of tight line swinging a lot of these flies. And they, it's like they hit it. You feel it before they've actually got a hold of it. Mm-hmm. And so you slip a line, you leave a loop here. And when you feel that, you just drop that line. And then you pick it back up. And you
So it gives what, like a quarter second lag in between?
Yeah, maybe a half second. Full. Yeah. But it's just, or even the just pick your rod up without the loop, you know, letting it slide. It, you kind of come tight at the same time. But 60, 40 ain't terrible. 60, we could go on a highlight. We could look at one of the films, how many hits you get. I would say that's really good.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what I would do to fix if I had a 60% ratio, I'd feel pretty good about it. From a swing, I mean, that's all you do. I mean,
yeah. So I always think of like 50% as a baseline, not because maybe that's an average, but it's just a simple number to go off of. And I'm not that bright, so the math's easier thinking at 50%. But it's, I always think about it. I spent a lot of this last year thinking about how fish eat flies, and the main data points I'm able to gather. I mean, I think I nymphed maybe 15 drifts this year with friends' rigs. So salmon flies primarily, because that's very visual, or it can be, swinging and then stripping.
Salmon flies, probably a 50 at best.
Yeah.
At and best. So
fish behavior in terms of how they eat flies.
I bet if you took boils without an eat,
yeah,
you'd be in the 70-80%.
Yeah, if you 20%, took those out.
30-20% positive hookup.
Yes.
I mean, you take the drive-bys and the and the that vacuum underneath. I don't think so. Or just the push your nose against it thing.
Yeah.
Which is what I think is the funnest part of the whole damn.
Totally.
It is so cool. Watching that thing come. I had a salmon fly eat one time. I bet he bumped it. It was eternal drift. Just kept twitching it every time he'd bump it, and I'll bet it did it 10 times.
Yeah,
it was a 30, 40 foot bank. Just
the whole
he
way
never. Around. I don't think he ever ate it either. Yeah, I don't remember. It could have been a 2 footer, and he ate it, and I wouldn't remember.
No,
I mean
it's the interaction.
It's not true. If it was a 2 footer, I would have. But if it was a 20 coming up and poking his nose at, it's so cool, and it's the same childlike. Look it. You know, you can hear it in any boat. Look. And it's like, then of course the guy tells you, do this. So full of shit. It's just, fish got to want to eat it.
Yeah. You know? I know I talked about this, but the first time I went out and fished salmon flies with Jeremy, all of a sudden I saw this big gold bar under my fly. And it's just drifting backwards. So Jeremy's like, fucking do something. I'm like, what? I don't know.
Twitch it.
Yes. Yeah, I didn't get the fish, but... So I spent a lot of last year thinking about these fish interactions that we're talking about, right? Salmon flies is very visual. Stripping streamers can be visual or tactile. Swinging streamers is almost exclusively tactile. And, you know, when you're swinging streamers, if you're doing it at short distance, you can see it. But most of the time we're throwing spay rods. We're somewhere between 35 and 80 feet. And you're not going to see it as much. So you never know when you do get those swirls, right? Some people say, and I've heard this more of steelhead, and I think it's because they're moving more water. Some people say they can feel a fish refuse a fly when they come up and they feel the swirl behind it.
Yep.
And I think you need to have really smooth, slow water. I haven't fished steelhead enough to understand that or be dialed into that, but I've heard that that's possible. What I'm getting at here is that, you know, fish eat flies differently. And my theory, which I spent a lot of time talking to our guides, our shop staff, Kelly, Johnny, everybody that comes in about this year, and I'm sure I'm not the first one to have this theory, but fish eat flies differently on different days. Like there's days where it's full on suicide bite. They hammer streamers. And there's days where they come up, they throw the brakes on, they grab it and just like shake it and throw it. And they throw it before you even have a chance to set on it. Then there's days where they just come up and tap it. Then there's days where they drive by it but don't hit it. And I think, you know...
Big swirls underneath.
Yeah, you can sort of copy and paste that to the salmon flies. It's a little different, but they have the lip bumping. Mm-hmm. They have the suction down. They have I had fish this year that just bite half of it, right? Yeah. They're not taking the whole fly in. They're just chomping the edge of it and pulling it under. So there's all these different ways to do it. And I think that these things drastically affect your hookup percentage.
But he's in the driftless, he said, right?
Yeah, but he's still swinging, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that, you know, they're like, we always talk about it. There's days where I swing where I go, you know, 10 for 10 or 8 for 8. And then I remember being up on the Missouri with Lucas. I went 0 for 14 and like solid grabs, mm-hmm. you know, peel line, let go. And to a certain extent, it's law of large numbers. But I think that there is fish behavior involved in it. What do you think about that?
Totally agree. I don't, there's no, I mean, if you've witnessed it enough angling, there's the undescribable. It can't happen, mm-hmm. right? I was fishing with Larry Larson during the one fly one time, speaking of two drunken people, that morning. That was the morning Larry went, he had to quit and go, and he crapped on his waiter.
That was that's a
that's
toughie.
Some good stuff. Yeah. But we both watched a giant, and he looked at me afterwards. After he goes, first he said, "You broke him off." He's yelling at me. I don't like that, especially my guide. And I'm like, I just looked at him like, I think you should stop that. And I go, I didn't break him off. And he goes, I saw it. The fly went down his throat. And it was a cougar.
Yeah.
A number 4 cougar, I think. Maybe 6. I don't know if we could fish a 4. And the fly went down his throat, and I sat back, straight back on him. Nothing. It's impossible. It's physically, the mouth closed completely. It's a giant. This is a high 30s fish, 30 something, yeah. You know, 28, 9, 30, 32 something.
Big fish.
Giant freaking brown.
Yeah.
And it goes, ooh, oh, and I mean, I don't, it never opened his mouth. And I'm like, whoa, totally sure that's it,
they,
right?
They had him.
Yeah. Flies on, there's hooks fine, everything's good. It's impossible,
yeah.
Right? You're going to see that 1,000 times in your life. And you're going to see, I mean, how many times you watch a salmon fly go completely down his throat and you set up and there's nothing there. And you can see his head, doesn't open his mouth. Just doesn't happen.
Yeah.
Doesn't happen. Mike Craig had a fish on the Dean River. I think I've told this before, that I witnessed every single eat. I'm above him about 10, 15. We're in the six pack on the Dean. And this little hen, you know, like probably 10, 11 pound hen, eats a dry fly. Mm-hmm. 13 times and runs line off his reel and lets go. And I watch it open his mouth and let it go.
Yeah.
Well, the law of averages, at some point, you know, I get that he's closed his mouth and running and he can't really set the hook really well.
Right.
I mean, there's, you think
they're,
you're...
they're bite strength,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Yeah, you think you are and see it turn and go like that and open his mouth and the fly go popping up. He hit it one time, 3 times in one run.
Jeez.
So now, what do you do? Shit happens.
Yeah.
It just happens, you know? I was listening to a podcast. It was the beginning of, I don't know if it was Roland Martin. I think it was the beginning of his podcast on Milhouse, the guy. But it was, I think it's like an entry to it. And they're talking, other people are like highlights of the, you know, just mm-hmm. the podcast. Guy goes, I come up and I shoot it and I lung this thing. It hits the ground and it jumps up and I knock another arrow and I hit it on the other side. Double lungs this thing.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the opposite.
That's the intro to the Milhouse.
That's fight. The opposite of, you know, I missed it 3 times. This guy doubled up, lungs on each side. And the deer's like, whoa, bam, bam, bam. But you just can't, I don't know. It's kind of like when I was talking about anatomy of a fisherman. Mm-hmm. When he says, there's all types of fishermen. It's really short. For those of you who don't know, I mean, this guy, John Volk, Robert Traver, I mean, his pen name, he's wrote a lot of books, right? Trout Man, and there's just a whole bunch of them, right? My favorite, Laughing Whitefish. But he just got this way of talking. Mm-hmm. And it's so, I mean, he's a genius, obviously. He's a Supreme Court justice. He's a lawyer. He's all this stuff. But he's just got this fun way to read. And he's going on about people and their idea, how they all, that was in the thing where he says, I've met all kinds of fishermen and I've yet to meet one that no matter how good they think they are, that could make a fish eat if they don't want to.
Yeah.
And there's no getting around the fact that from a pure dry fly perspective, if you do nothing but dry, And I would argue that you've seen, if you are a pure dry, probably aren't listening to me, but if you were, and like you've said forever, I mean, my first 20 years of guiding was almost exclusively dry flies. And my first 30 years of fishing was almost exclusively dries. But you see every type of refusal on earth. Mm-hmm. And if you're the guide, you've got an answer for every one of them.
Yep.
Until you got to put the rod in your hand. And you go, oh, shit, that didn't work, you know?
Sometimes it's easier in that rower seat.
Yo, man, you're always smart. Easier you are said always than right. Done. You are. Yes. Oh, yeah, I would have got that one. And it's, I don't know. Anytime you can go 50%, I mean, shit, that's great.
Yeah.
If he's hitting 60, I'm thinking, ooh, you got the code cracked pretty good if you ask me. I wouldn't change much. I mean, if you're getting the 60s routinely, he is saying a 60% success, right? Is that what he said?
Yeah. Yep. Says good days are 60 to 70.
Yeah, and the rest of the days are like mine then.
Yeah, yeah. I was thinking about this. In editing these fishing shows, we'll go out for 8 hours and we make a 20 to 30 minute show. So there's a lot that gets cut. And yeah. There's a lot of dead windows in there. There's, you know, times where it's absolutely on, you rope them. There's times where it isn't and you don't. There are a lot of hook sets. Lose fish.
Yeah.
And don't go in.
Done.
Even if we know it was a huge fish, like we can see it, it's a big one. If I don't get that on camera, it doesn't go on the show because it's just not that interesting.
No.
And so obviously these shows, we try to be as authentic as we can. We're making a product that is supposed to be interesting.
Yeah.
Right. So it's not perfectly realistic to how the day pans out. There's obviously, we try.
Sometimes, yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, a lot of time we talk about what happened, but I'm not showing
the
all
the only ones
the
that are
fish.
as advertised are the ones where it's an unreal day.
Yes.
Because nobody wants to watch, excuse me, nobody wants to watch people just casting about, right?
No.
And you try to fill, Gene Herring sent me his, by the way, a long time ago, I had a show. Well, Gene Herring was the producer of Flyfish TV. Mm-hmm. And he's downloaded every episode.
He's putting them on YouTube.
Yep.
Yeah, so go check them out, Flyfish TV.
Flyfish TV Gene's or Cascade great. Media, Gene Herring. And he wrote me a letter. And Gene's the biggest liberal that ever walked the earth, right? How the hell we sat in vans, because we used to drive everywhere, right? Yeah. All the way across the country. Man, you could just feel when it was going to go south.
Is he going to be our 2025 Lib of the Year?
Probably. I know Swanee's right up there. All my friends. It's proof that you can be friends with your adversaries. Oh, my God. Swanee tries to light me up once a week. He sends me some stupid shit.
I love when we're in your car and text comes in from Swanee and you have your little British gal read it out loud.
But Gene and I, there used to be a line with Gene always in that show. Well, you never heard it. Anyway else heard it. It's like, okay, catch one now. Kelly, we need a fish now. We've got 10 minutes. We need a fish now.
Catch one.
Catch one.
You told me that and I adopted 100 it. Times. I thought it was so damn funny.
In every show, on a TV show, you get like 23 minutes of air, after commercials and all that kind of shit. And so, but we did that show for pretty much just him and I for, I think, 5 years. And it used to have a host of a bunch of hosts, and then it was pretty much just him and I. But I would say 1 out of 5 shows went as planned, where you actually, and if you get realistic with yourself, other than the massive dinosaur egos out there that always are the best and can always outfish everybody, if you just get realistic and you think about going fishing with your buddies, I don't care who you are. I mean, Howard and I can get our ass kicked is just as much as two guys that just started. It happens. Yeah. You're going to crack a code maybe a little quicker. I wish I'd have brought that book over because he's talking about how the old duffers and the new guy, how their experience level sometimes helps them.
Mm-hmm.
But more often than not, it's the young ducks that come in that don't know shit, that outfish everybody, because they're not afraid to try something different. And we stick with the things that we know.
Right.
And I was watching the BSS thing this morning, I told you. They're talking about Fothergill, the kid that was 22 and he won the Classic. And I think it was the Classic, I can't remember. But it was, I mean, just crushed everybody, right? Crushed every record, did everything. And he's not afraid to try stuff.
Yeah.
You know, the kid's, I mean, he's phenomenal. And he started in the high school leagues, but I mean, obviously, but so it's just one of those things. I mean, 60%, I don't care which, a dry fly, nymphing, that might be a little low, but I mean.
But when you consider how often fish probably eat your fly and spit out before there's any ability to register.
Yeah, I'm sure that's there. Like, but with Euro nymphing, it's a lot less.
Yeah, with the guys who are really good.
If you're drop shotting or if you're Euro nymphing, you're gonna be up in that 80 plus, and then you take a Howard or a Lance or guys like George Dan, guys that are, they're gonna be in the 90, 95.
But I remember that day. I think it was the day we floated.
Doesn't mean you land them. Just means you hook. Positive hookup where you're
okay. Yeah. So that's what I was going to say.
You're playing barbless hooks too now.
Yeah, I remember that day where it's the show I've been working on for a while now. You hooked, I don't know how many fish and lost so many of them. Just one of those days.
Next day you don't lose any.
Right.
I've done it.
That kind of shit.
I've done it with streamers and
totally
with a barb.
Yeah.
You know, I try to pinch, but times get tough. I'll sell my soul. I mean, I always pinch them a little. I mean, I might not pinch them flat, but I might pinch it so it's like a micro barb, so it can't throw it on a jump, you know? Hence the fact I don't slack line my jump fish. I pull at them.
Right.
Because I...
No bow into the king, especially not on 12 pound.
No, and I just, you know, I've said that on a ton of videos. You can turn them, you can direct them in the air. They're weightless and you can turn them. But the big thing is if they go up and you're just totally loose line them and they shake their head, I've watched maybe thousands of flies. That's when they can throw it. I'd rather take the chance of turning them. But with a barbed hook, I'm not as worried. But with a nymph, you know, a two fly rig, a nymph, you know, and it's plus add the fact that when a fish jumps and it's got a 3-0 bead in it, pretty heavy, and there's no barb, and he shakes his head, that thing can go flying a lot easier than a weightless fly.
It's essentially a pendulum, right? Like it's...
One of those times it's going to go, well, it depends on where it's hooked, obviously.
Right.
And those eagle claw type points, they do hold a little better as long as it's all the way in. But regardless, you're going to have... It's part of the whole fun.
Yeah.
You don't score a buck every time you go hunting. You don't get late. Never
if
mind.
You didn't, wouldn't be. Oh, okay. Oh yeah, no, I do.
I was only a couple of us that can do that.
No, but it wouldn't be fun if you did, right?
I don't know. There's some that would argue that, but.
No, 100% success. I mean, you need some sort of failure.
What was this guy's name? I forgot.
Great.
Rich?
It was Brett.
Brett, I mean, if you're in a 50 to 60 on anything, phew.
Yeah. Phew, okay, so let's...
That's pretty damn good.
Let's kind of dive back.
I'm guessing that you're pretty good at this stuff.
Yeah, fishing the Driftless for 45 years. I imagine he's learned a thing or two. Let's get real specific with this question again. What can the either Brett or the average angler do to increase hookup percentage on swinging? So you talked about the strip strike.
The only thing that I could say is a slip strike.
Yeah.
Not a strip strike, a slip strike.
Slip strike.
And that's only if you are feeling the thump and you're not getting a fish. You feel it consistently getting a thump and you're like, whoa, I didn't get him.
Yeah.
And you try, and that's not to say that the slip's going to suddenly make it 100%. But it does for sure make a difference. I mean, when I was steelheading, I always, when I would swing, especially when I'm too far out you know, when I, for me, would be 80 feet because that's about the max that I could possibly single-handed fly efficiently. I mean, you know, and control it. But when I got further out, I didn't get quite as many tugs. If I was tighter, closer, if I'm like 80 feet out, generally that thing's, you know, you feel by the time you react, you're on. Mm-hmm. If I'm tight, like 35, 40 feet on the first sets, you know, I would always set shit. And some rivers, I might throw 20 feet.
Right.
I mean, I used to always walk in one pool up in BC. I'd walk out and fish where I walked. I'd fish the inside with 20-foot, 25-foot casts and just roll them. Because mm-hmm. I find fish over in that short in the daylight. I don't know why. They'd yeah. just be there. And I would, those I would slip on. If I got one that was too close, those were the ones that I tend to miss. And the slip was really, really, really important. If I'm airing one out there 80 feet, I would still do it sometimes. I did it on dry flies. I hated fishing dry flies way away from me. Yeah. It is so counterintuitive to the pleasure of watching a fish eat it.
Yeah.
You know, because half the time on a long, long cast, I wouldn't even see it. I mean, I might see the water move a little bit and it's like, oh, gotcha, right? But on that short stuff, anything under 40 feet, I would always slip strike.
Yeah.
Even on a wet fly swing, I would do it.
I was talking to Johnny about the clear water and fishing out there and stuff. And, you know, whenever I get fish, I think I'm a hero. And then I go through these long stretches of not getting fish. And I you know, do deep dives into what am I doing wrong? How can I improve? How can I be better? And I asked Johnny if he thought I was casting too far. And the two things that made me think that, well, one, I read a lot of, you know, guide reports saying, if you can get your client out to 70 feet, they're in the game. I'm like, all right, well, I think I'm pretty consistently at 130 feet. Am I too far? Am I not controlling my fly in the fishy zones, whatever? And then I remember hearing people talk about, you know, fishing dry line, floating leader, unweighted flies, which is what I'm doing, and seeing fish boil on it. Do my eyes suck?
You can't really see one at 100 feet.
No, God, no. And that's, I think a lot of these guys are fishing 45 to 70, and that's where you can, you know, in a slick and a tail out, that's where you can see it. And so I think there are places where, you know, it was either Bruce Kruk or Tracy Allen talking about this, but generally the guys catch the most fish on the Clearwater are the best casters. It's the guys who, and they're great at casting because they obviously fish there a ton, so I'm sure that their reading water is unbelievable, their skill at reading water. But their fly line is actually laying out the cleanest, so their fly starts fishing immediately, thus they're covering more water. But there's also runs where those fish hold in the middle. And if you can get it 140 feet, 150 feet, you have access to fish that other people don't. But at the same time that is advantageous, I think it can also hurt you if you're, like, I'm very new to the steelhead game, absolutely in love with it, but, you know, if I'm not understanding where the fish are and I think they're out there, but they're actually in close, then I don't think I have nearly the control over my fly in the fishy water, that I should if I'm at that distance.
Well, I never was at Tracy or any of those guys' caliber. I was never a spay guy. I mean, I did for a very short window, but I didn't like it like everybody else does. I like to watch it. But I don't know how anyone can control a fly and set a hook at 140 feet, right? I'm sure they can. I mean, but I was talking to Stenerson, who I told you, John has been doing this since probably before most anyone, right? And lived on the salmon and all this stuff.
We've talked about John. He is an incredible single hand spay caster, tire, I mean, everything.
His son's spectacular. I did a show on with his kid on the salmon, but the steelhead fishing. But he said he's going back to single hand. You know, it's just, I think mostly it's just an act of defiance, but it was just like so sick of everybody hucking. But that was what, you know, that I can't remember who it was, somebody out on the island that said this, he's a big spay guy, he's a retailer, and he said the single best thing that ever happened to steelhead was spay fishing, or steelheaders, steelheading. The single best thing that ever happened to steelheading was spay, and the single best thing that ever happened to steelhead is spay.
Because they're catching less of them?
Yes. Because all anybody wants to do is huck that son of a bitch 140 and neglect
all of the insides
and all the things behind you that wouldn't require it. Right. And all the buckets that you're not, you don't give a shit that you don't even, I watch guys so mindlessly walk rivers that, and just straight out of the gate. And I know guys that are good don't do that. You know,
totally.
You're not going to take a Tracy Allen who's not going to go out there, Deck Hogan's not going to go out, huck one 140 feet before he goes for every other bucket between him and the 40, okay, 140.
So there's someone that I won't say their name, but I know that you're fairly close with this individual. But I heard that this person goes out and steelheading and immediately rips off the entire head and a bunch of running line, and the first cast is 60 feet. That bothers me. I hate when people do that. I yell at the guys in the shop when they go do that between the lakes. Also, some guy commented and said that between the lakes is the only place
you
I
fish?
Talk about.
I saw that.
Did you see my comment back to him?
No, I don't.
I said something like, that's the only place I will talk about to you heathens. I fish in a lot of places. I don't want to see you. Yeah. So,
and it's 5 minutes from the shop after
we fish
work,
there a
and
lot.
We go there a
yes.
lot. And it has one of the highest big fish concentrations too.
Yes. But point being, even like, you know, when I'm throwing a 15-foot rod and a long belly line and I'm going to work out to that, you know, low hundreds, whatever, I start with the leader. Like I start at my feet because there could be one there. Oftentimes they are tight within. I mean, Chris has talked about hooking one with not the leader out of his rod, right? You're just like, oh shit, it's a rock. Oh no, it's not.
I'm trying to remember what magazine I was reading. It was in a Steelhead and Atlantic Salmon Journal. Tom Perro's rag that was out for a while, big, large format, and way back. And God, it was somebody super famous too. And I think it excerpted from Trey Combs' book, actually, one of the guys in the book. But he was talking about how he saw fish come to his feet. Mm-hmm. And he started basically nymphing around his feet whenever he starts. He just hucks out and nymphs it up. Basically, because he says, you don't need to cast.
Right.
You got a 10, 15-foot rod, whatever the hell you know you're using. And he might have been in a single hand days, even.
Yeah.
But I always did the same thing. I mean, I would start in, I wouldn't do that short, but like I was saying up on that one flat in BC, in one of the most famous runs in the world, I've never seen anybody throw to river left, ever, yeah. Period, end of discussion. And I caught, I don't know, 3 or 4 fish out of there on that in less than 15 inches of water, I'd say.
That's crazy.
And that only in the morning, though. Only in the morning. I fished it all times of the day and never caught one. But I have spent enough time steelheading around and seen walking and going, oh, shit, there's one. Well, didn't have to cast to it if you saw the son of a bitch.
Yes.
Right? So, but it was just a trend. I kind of assume because I'm not into that game anymore. And I just assumed that, and I'm pretty sure it's how it happens. I guarantee you Will Godfrey, who's been fishing steelhead on the Clearwater since either of us were born.
Yeah.
He was just in the, what do they call it? The Senior Olympics in the 84 to 89 category. It took us 2 silvers and a bronze and something else. Yeah. Shot put and discus and something else. And I'm pretty sure Will's not running out and hucking one 180 feet away. You know, he's
a little more targeted than that.
Yeah. But I mean, I would assume that the Tracy Allens and the Deck Hogans and the rest of the new superstars.
The Klaus Freemores, yes.
Well, I mean, the guys I know, I'm certain that they have a really great short game. And I assume that you would watch them and have a good short game too.
Yeah.
So you kind of answered your own question. I keep losing them when they're 140 feet. Hmm.
Well, actually, I've had really good luck with hookups with steelhead. I think I'm, and it's luck. I'm not saying I'm good at it. I've had good luck with hookup percentages at distance. And the luck's going to turn for me at some point.
Well, that's what I was saying. My long distance kit, but my long distance was like, if I jacked a 90, that would have been, you got a 100, you got a 100 footer out there with a leader.
Yep.
Right? But I would say mostly 70, 80s would be my big one. But you have so little time, the fish could, especially steelhead, who can push from behind. They do that a lot, where your line short, you feel it slacking up. You can almost see it sometimes. But they have time to get, given that you don't have some stupid belly that's nuking the son of a bitch.
Right.
But I mean, if it's actually coming into its field, that's a, you, there's, it takes longer for you to know it's happening, given that they don't turn on it and just, you know, you can tell the difference between just an E and one that turned on it and coming sideways. Yeah, just, how do you miss it?
Those are the ones where your reel starts exploding.
Yeah, well, you don't touch nothing. You didn't do a damn thing. No. But they're way out there. I thought it was more consistent than the ones where I would, like you, oh, you beat them, right? Yeah. That's why I would slip strike, because they told me on my, to never, to, you know, like when I first started dry fly fishing for steelhead, I never set the hook. Mm-hmm. My first fish ate bullshit. I'm hitting that thing. And I got lucky. Mm-hmm. And I got it, right? He came in and ate it. So he annihilated it. There was not getting it away. And I was like, ugh. And I probably stood there for like a, you know, mailbox for a second and just went, just jacked it. I didn't, none of it was innate. It was just, it happened, right? But I found it really easy for me to slip strike and get that pause time to when I was trying to break that, like, oh shit, I could let my line go. You're only talking about that much line.
Right.
Right. And shoop, you're tight.
Foot and a half.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah.
So, I mean, but the long distance ones, I didn't slip
strike. So my methodology has always been, I heard this somewhere and it's just what I've done and it works for me. I do nothing. I stand there and I let them eat it. And I let them pull it. And I let them pull a lot before. And like the ones I lose are the ones that don't eat it that good and then turn and swim at me. And that's just, that's the nature of the game, right? But like if they eat it and turn, I feel like I have a pretty good hookup percentage. I do this with trout. I do this with steelhead. I mean, I've caught a lot of species of fish on this tight line grab where you just, man, okay, so.
Have you dry fly fished yet for steelhead?
But not to any success. Yes.
Yeah.
I've skated.
You grease lined.
I've skated dry flies for trout.
Mm-hmm.
I've done hoppers and salmon flies. So similar, but not the same. But keep in mind when I say this, I've been hanging out with 8 to 14 year old kids ski instructing for the last week and a half. To me, standing there and like holding your fly rod while a fish is chewing on your fly before it takes off and turns. Stees, whatever kids call it, they've got terms for this stuff. To me, it's just fucking cool. It is so cool to like stand there. Every part of your inner being wants to like set up. You know, everybody has this ingrained.
That's why I asked you if you fish dry flies, because if you can do that with a wet fly, then you'll be okay on a dry fly, because you won't.
Don't freak out. Like they
don't beat it. Like don't beat them.
That big steelhead I caught this year. I mean, it chewed on it for 5-6 seconds and then it ate it and just sat there for a while, and all of a sudden I just tight and there's no better feeling in the world. If you could put that in a bottle, I mean, I would be a drug addict. I think we all are to a certain extent, right? That's why we do this. But that feeling of like, and you know, maybe it felt like a minute. I'm sure it was 5 seconds or less or 2 seconds, whatever it was. But time just stops and you're tight to that fish and you're like, he's there, but I have this mental
control. I don't know about
this
chewing thing. I'm just having a hard time with that in my mind. My thought is he's hooked instantly. He's going, shaking his head. And he's trying to figure out, why is this son of a bitch in my lip?
It could be. I don't know what it is because
I just have a hard
it's
time
like a bump. I call it chewing, but it's like a bump and then nothing.
I don't know. I'm nothing. Speculating.
I think they're coming up and like toying with the fly. Because I've seen it. I've watched
it
happen.
That's how this whole conversation started.
Right.
They do things, they all do it different.
I watched it at Lando when Chuck was swinging, like fish come up and like like they're hovering behind it and kind of doing this. Mm-hmm. And I'm picturing like what they do to salmon flies. They nudge right. it, they bump it, they do sure. a little pull.
Curious.
And then they finally grab it. And but just that feeling where they're on and they, you know, I was talking to Peter, our Hardy rep, about it. Now, Hardy men, you know, they talk about these things with clicks. Oh, he clicked twice.
Yeah.
And then he clicked two more times. And then he pulled. And it's just, you know, and I was telling him about this fish, and it, as it's playing with his fly, it's not spinning the reel at all. But I can feel it. And then he grabs it. And then it goes tick, tick, tick. And then all of a sudden that thing's 300 yards away. Not 300, that's 900 feet. 300 feet away, cartwheeling. And I go, ooh, I'm in trouble. And that's just the best. It's cool.
I told that story about Harry Lemire when I asked him on the river. I think we were on the Bulkley. No, we were on the Kispiax. I said, why do all you guys use those, you know, Hardys? You're like some kind of cult. And it gives me the whole dissertation about how stupid I was and using drags and all that shit.
Yeah.
But he also said, which I never bring up, he goes, and it just sounds nice. Tick, tick. And I've stood, I told you, I watched him swing around one time and he gets this fish and it was.
It's cool shit. Yeah. I've enjoyed fishing Hardy reels, and shameless plug for Hardy, that salmon marquee that I bought. Mm-hmm. It's like a very moderately priced reel. You're not spending $1,000 on it. Like it's like a $450 reel, and maybe it's slightly more than that. I got the salmon number 3. It's a giant steelhead reel. It sounds great. It functions perfectly. It looks nice. And it screams. I remember I was fishing a tail out on the Clearwater, and Chris is on the other side of the river from me. And this is a skinny tail out, and I know nothing about fishing tail out, so I'm like I'm a little shallower than knee deep, but I'm well off the bank, so I'm pretty close to the other side. Most of the water's on the river left. He's sanded over there, and I throw a cast, and it hits drag, and he just goes, I can hear him doing it from the other side of the bank, just mimicking the reel. And something about that feeling, having 800 grains hit that drag. This is what I was going to say earlier, too. I got invited to go fish a steelhead river. I won't name because it's not that popular. I mean, it's known, but it's not a very big river. And I said no because I wanted to go throw a 15-footer. There are big fish in that river. It's a famous river. It's a dry fly river. I wanted to go throw my 15-footer because I love that feeling of all that weight smashing against the reel. Like, I'm addicted to that.
You are what the guy was talking about.
You are
best what thing that ever happened to steelheading, and the best thing that ever happened to steelhead.
I'm a complete fucking idiot, but I'm happy, so who cares?
And you know what? That's great.
Yeah.
When it first showed up, I was like, other than the two or three guys I knew how to fish them, they left so many fish. It was spectacular.
They leave a lot of fish on the inside. I saw it.
Anything.
Some clip of some guy who's up on the Skeena.
Not everyone.
No.
Like all the guys in the... I think you have to do that. You have to go through that. Why would you use a 15-foot rod and not want to... I mean, it's like a 75-year-old lady, old man buying a new sports car. Are you going to air that son of a bitch out, or are you just going to sit there?
Yeah.
Let's see what it does, Let's let it go.
Stomp on it a little. Let's see what you got.
Yeah. It's like there's a commercial for Bass Tracker or Mercury Boats or something, Mercury Motors, something, and the guy's got his daughter in the boat. He goes, you can hear him talking to himself. Oh, man, she's so into this. And the motor says, not if you drive like that, Dad. Show her what it's got. Right? And you get into spey fishing, what do you want to do?
Everybody wants to throw
30 feet? You can do that with a single hand. You want to throw 50? You can do it with a single hand. Let it air out.
Yep.
Then, reinvent yourself and learn how to fish.
Yeah, totally.
Also, at least you'll know how to do the other one,
Right.
I fished with Peter Humphreys a couple of times. Peter's one of the best spey guys I know. Unbelievable. He's Jerry's buddy. And... I've watched Peter, he can do any cast. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would put him in the top 10, 5% of the world. And I have never seen Peter air one out first. I watch him out of the boat a lot of times. We're on anchor, right? I just sit there and troll right beside the boat.
Yeah.
And just sit there and huck it out a little bit and huck, and then I'll give him some shit, right? And he does, and his English is, you know, he's total limey. And he's got the accent. And so then all of a sudden it's like, poonk. Oh, wrong side of the river. He's over there. But always, and all the good guys that I've ever fished with, I'm not saying, no, it's no always. It just,
what
they
would
saying? Generally.
There's no always and there's no never.
Never, no yeah. never, no always.
Yeah.
But if they are, if they know the water sucks, I mean, if they can read the water, I mean, if you, you know, if you got a Will Godfrey who's fished for, you know, 70 years, mm-hmm. he might know that he doesn't give a shit about that inside. And he might just be going for the one bucket yep. that he already knows. Mm-hmm. And he just says, screw it, I'm not walking over there, right? And does it, that's different.
Yep.
But what you saw when it first started showing up, so, and I mean, I'm in Michigan, you know, on the Muskegon, the Manistee, a lot of that water's, you know, the whole river's 90 feet wide, or mm-hmm. maybe the Muskegon's bigger, and some parts of the Manistee, but for the most part, you know, I could single-hand across a lot of it. And you'd see these guys just like, unloading these things, right? And they would literally line half their run.
Yeah.
Because they'd always go to the same spot, and I'd be like, why don't you start higher and hit the water that's right in front of you? No, that's good that you don't. Thank you. When they were gone, we could go catch fish.
Right.
And so, yeah, enough of that. I'm going to sew out Fish Howard with this fly.
That's a pretty looking fly. Last thing on that real quick. I mentioned this a while ago, but I've now had, I don't know, over a half dozen dudes sending me videos of their spay casts and trying to help them over Instagram. I'm a complete spay casting nerd. I love talking about it. So if you want help with that stuff, send it to me on Instagram. And then we won't talk about it anymore.
Good.
All right. Something.
We just beat you the same way.
What's that?
We just beat you the same way yep. every time.
Okay. So the one thing I wanted to bring up here. Oh God, where did it go? From the last episode we did, I was talking about my brother wanting to like database.
Oh yeah, yeah.
We were talking about fly fishing journals and stuff like yeah, that. Yeah. Stockton Giles, I believe is his name, sent this to me on Instagram. He said, "Hey man, just listen to the new episode. Great one. Funny timing here, but I heard you talking about your brother. I've been designing an app that would serve as a fish journal. It's called Fishy Tales. If you type in fishytales.app in your URL browser, it should show up. I set it up with any feature I can think I'd want. If you or any fishy cats you know could give me feedback, it'd be much appreciated. If you let me know how much Kelly hates a phone fishy diary, that would be appreciated as well. Thanks for reading my rambling, if you have."
Is it Tales?
Fishy Tales.
Fishy Tales?
Yep. So check it out. I haven't actually gone out and looked at it yet.
How do you spell Tales?
T-A-L-E-S. Were you just writing while looking at me? That made me uncomfortable for some reason.
No, I'm going to look it up.
Okay. Yeah.
What was the point about?
Well, just because we
journals are journals or journals. You can always
what do you think about that? You can always man phone versus being in person.
Well, you can always man up and go and make a journal later.
Yeah.
You know, nobody carrying a journal with them. So it's, I mean, as much as I hate technology and what it's done to us, I would say, you know, if you could hit it on your phone, you could do that anyway and go back and do an actual journal.
Actually,
as I said once when John Randolph told me that I should do ebooks, I said, how do you smell an ebook?
Yeah.
And you'll find when you get older that you don't want to look. If anyone who's grown up with photographs and cell phones, are so fucking soulless. And to look at your picture, the best thing you could do for your pathetic life is to put it, go have it printed and put it in a book mm-hmm. so you can pick it up and look at it without that goddamn phone in your hand. And so, but I would not, I've got one with me always when I'm fishing.
Yeah.
You know, if I could say, wow, just got that on a butternut, you know, muddler and 20 inches behind a blob or whatever that I was fishing, and I could journal it and say, you know, boom, there. And if I was going to take a picture, I'd be taking it with my cell phone.
Mm-hmm.
But then I would do the right thing, and I'd go have it made into a picture. Right. So I could put it into an album so I could smell my books. But no, I'm not totally anti.
So
it's just, you know, anything that, and I think it would be, it's probably better. It's if, you know,
in terms
if I was rich, I'd have a smoking hot assistant that fished with me everywhere. I'd say, yeah, well, not quite.
What am I?
Let me clarify that.
I'm not the smoking hard part. You realize I literally am your assistant that documents everything you do fishing. You have a video journal of your fishing.
You wouldn't look quite the same as you do, and you would be writing it down.
A little bigger rack, maybe?
I didn't have to go there. I'm just saying you'd be writing it down, and I could transfer it. But I think it's a great idea. I mean, but I just, you know, I don't know how many people journal hatches anymore, all that stuff that was so cool for me. I don't know if people even give a shit about that anymore. I mean, but that was my favorite part of journaling.
Yeah.
The two things, hatches and steelhead migrations, when they'd show water temps, when they'd eat at water temps was most important to me, mm-hmm. and sky covers was always my, you know, whatever that was doing. And then but it only takes a little while before it becomes very consistent. The data always seems to line up, right? Mm-hmm. The same things, and including hatches for the most part. But time of day, you know, how often when does a Hendrickson really pop its head out, mm-hmm. right? What time of day how many days with sun will you ever see a Hendrickson?
Right.
Never. When will you see this, right? You know, always on this day. And so it was. That part, you can do it on a phone and transfer it. But it's just not, I sit on that damn phone at night all the time, reading email and shit. Mm-hmm. And then people send me letters. It's like taking a caning for me to read that phone. Mm-hmm. Somebody gets a letter, I can't wait to sit down and read it.
Yeah.
Right? I don't know. I think it's just old fogey bullshit.
Yeah.
I mean, just there's no soul to it. But I think it's a great idea, in particular if it got people into, because I just think it's so important for anyone to have that in their life if they're going to continue, unless you're Johnny. I mean, if you're Andy Sabota or Johnny or, you know, Bramer or somebody, remember every detail of every second you're fishing. Don't get caught up in everything that the actual fishing. You know, and you can database it all, great. But it's still, I've got a journal in there I found in some old Tupperware thing that goes back, I think, into the 70s. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. Got sketches in it. Sketch on your phone. Try that one someday. Yeah. Got sketches in it of the bugs and how these hennies are getting to the surface and they don't know it. The water temp's right, it's double nickels. Actually, it's 56 degree water. Getting the top, it is zero out. And they hit the top, they're like, and they're just froze.
Yeah.
And these fish are just smiling. There's snow everywhere. It's coming down. It's the coolest thing, but it's this hump. They're just like, oh shit, this ain't happening. And so I love his idea. Anything that gets people more involved, you know, we've just become such a take a selfie, take a picture. And I'll argue this with anybody. I just don't think you remember as well when you have that picture on your cell phone. I really don't. That's why I quit. I just don't remember my fish when I...
Yeah, you just remember the image.
Yeah, well, then I go back to see the image, but I used to remember...
Memory disappears.
Yeah.
Okay, so three things. One, you said...
But I think it's a great idea.
Yeah, no, I think it is too. So on
Fishy
tails.
Yes.
So I haven't had a chance to look at it yet. The things that I think would... There's pros and cons to doing handwritten journals. Like, there's soul in those journals. And I was just thinking about it while you're talking. Like, I'm kind of a piece of shit. But ideally, what I'd like to do this year is... keep just a small notebook with me and a small pen. And then, you know, anytime I get a fish I think is cool for some reason that's unique to me, you know, even like sketch out a little, the run that I'm in you know, the fly that it ate, how it ate, and time it ate.
This exactly has been in my, like these have been in my, you can't see these things.
Here, can I take a picture of one of these?
I mean, these are just, it's been in my, look at this sketch. It's like, I'm on the river. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Can't even see what it is.
It's this kind of stuff.
Yeah. Yes. And it's, I've been doing these all my life. Every fly I ever did is, in some way, is in one of these books. But I always kept them on the river in my vest or your hip pack, whatever it is. Mm. But there's a deliberation to going home and consciously writing and remembering this down, right?
It's what we talked about in school with, like, you learn it in class, but it's so important to go do the homework on it because it's the second view of it that cements it in your mind. That's what actually what learning is. It's not just read it once and it's gone. Yeah. It's the coming, being able to come back to it or that refocus that cements it.
And it also lets you remember it again. Exactly. And if it's that memorable, it will help you solidify that in your brain. Mm-hmm. But you get to do it twice.
Yeah.
You know, you go back. Some of them I talked about my fights with the fish. I was reading, you know, in anatomy. I think I've read it three times this weekend. Mm-hmm. In the last 3 days. I mean, it's not like it's short stories, right? They're just funny. But talking about his, you know, best night of his life and doesn't get home till midnight and how he crashes and burns going through the swamp on the way out and all that. Fun shit, right?
Totally.
I'm sure it was a black bear Sasquatch. I don't know yet. But I had one track me once 100 yards upstream. It was frightening. It's 1 o'clock in the morning, right? But I've also got one of the best bites going I've ever had on a hex hatch. I said, fuck it, if I'm going to die, this is a great way to go.
Let's go now.
I hope it's Sasquatch because I want a shot at him. At least somebody say, I don't know, there's some known hair where his head used to be.
Right, yes.
You know, it'd be like, holy shit, how cool would that be? But I journaled it because it made noises, but I couldn't really understand. And the river's rolling, you know. But I would walk and stop, I'd hear it, and it would stop. And I'm like, oh, shit, this is just, but damn it, I got to get up to walking water because I know there's a 9-pounder up there eating. But yeah, I think it's really cool. I think it'd be really cool. I wonder, as techie, I was listening to Roland Martin last night on Milhouse, and he was talking about the new kids and forward imagery and how, you know, don't know. But then he went on to talk about going out and drone fishing off of some wreck for permit and airdropping their, you know, you ever seen that?
Yeah, the bait and stuff.
Yeah, you permit, you drone
send
over,
drone out,
but it's got a release.
Right.
And it drops it off right onto the fish. He goes, well, it's kind of fun. You know, it's like, so he's got that part going. But I wonder on the bass world, because he was talking about how all the new chips and all the new everything is just so, he goes, I don't do that. I can cross coordinate and do this stuff off of maps. And I can tell you where this is. Well, you can tell where it was when that map was made, but currents changed. Now the kids are looking at it in live time, right? In real time, here it is. But I wonder how many journal keepers there are in the bass world today, because it's so much more techie. I mean, I would guess this would be the kind of thing where fishy tails would be great, where a guy, you got an app on your phone, it's like 6-inch pink, you know, this and that, whatever I was fishing, this structure, this temperature, which to me, if it has a good side, which maybe be the bad side, because that would feed AI and then it would finally be able to tell you, just go do this and do this and do that and go home because it's impossible to catch a fish. But they would have an incredible database in it, right?
And that's the thing, is I think journals have changed, right? Like, you know, when you were keeping journals, that was your option. It's paper and pen. Now, think about, like, Chris's journal is on us.
Well, that's exactly what Rowan brought up, too, because Andy says, because Rowan's this monster hunter also. Mm-hmm. He's got turkey calls. He shot 300. And he asked him, well, what's the ultimate for you, turkey or would it be elk? And he goes, elk are just glorified turkey. It's the same thing.
Yeah.
And when you think of it, I thought about it, I go, wow, that's pretty accurate. You're up there calling them around, you know, making them come in. But he said, I live on onyx.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it's such a valuable tool. I mean,
doesn't it database all your marks everywhere you've been?
You know, and I'm scared. I don't like putting too much information into these things because I know Onyx can, like, I'm sure there's some developer in there that could go into my account and see where I'm fishing.
You don't think that cell phone that's in your pocket can do the same thing?
You know, I don't know if Apple cares as much. Like, Onyx is outdoors people, right? But, like, there's fishing apps, whatever the one Onyx bought, that, like, if you are database, if you're using it as a journal, I'm scared that somebody is going in from the back end.
I understand. I thought you meant they're tracking your footsteps. But
no, I'm scared that somebody's going in from the back end and, like, reading my fishing journal and finding out where it is. And so that is one thing I would want to make sure Stockton is not doing and has walls set up.
Simple cure for this. You just go to the shittiest run you can ever find.
Yeah, tell them that's where it is.
17 over 20.
Yeah, exactly. the lying... That is a quick way to become a like tinfoil hat wearing fella. When you start lying to your fishing journal online because you think people are coming after you.
There's something magical about sitting down and writing your day.
I agree. It's soulful.
Coming from an intellectual midget, I would take that means something because it was always work for me. And when I first started doing it, it was like, oh God, I was just trying to be like, cool, like Doc Ellis, because he did it, or somebody. And then all of a sudden I realized my day wasn't complete until it's kind of like if you start working out and you first start, you hate it, you know, it's like, oh shit. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, hey, I got to get going. I got something important to do.
What's the difference between doing it for someone else and then all of a sudden you start doing it for yourself?
Yeah.
Right? It's like doing it because you think it's cool and then all of a sudden you do it because you need to do it.
Yeah.
Because you like it or it's...
And there's
it's
nothing...
It's ends to a mean or the end. Or
there
the
are very
itself.
Few things in my life that are as cool for me to go back and to... I did it this weekend. Just looking at old photos and looking at my old journal.
Yep.
And I read the same five freaking pages every time I do it. But there's just something cool about it.
Totally.
You know? It's like... Warm toast. It just makes you feel good.
Yeah, yeah. So then the other things I'd want to see. The other things I'd want to see from Stockton's app, I'd want to be able to search by river and bug.
Let me interrupt you one second. It's porous mind. Anybody that's got a really cool picture of their journal or something, send it in.
Send it into email or
I'm going to bring a journal. I'm going to bring
Instagram.
A journal over, which has nothing in it.
Yeah.
All the pages are missing that I wrote in. There's only, like, I don't get it with this journal thing. It's like, I'm not supposed to have it. But it's one some guy, Tom Noms, who fished with since I was a child, he gave it to me. And it's leather bound.
Yeah, that's cool.
Dude.
Yeah.
Pretty freaking cool. And then I'll bring the one that Billy made me in high school. But it doesn't matter what it is. I mean, I did all the, I didn't carry those with me on the river. I carried those little freaking spiral things I could stick in a pocket.
Totally. Yeah.
It's just...
That's what I think I'm going to do this year.
Bring a pencil. Don't bring an ink pen.
Right.
The pens will blow up in your fucking vest or they'll freeze up on you.
Yeah.
You know?
I'd want to see I would want this app to be searchable by bug, by river. I mean, there may be a couple different things.
Barometric pressure.
Yeah.
Temperature, air, you know, sky.
Yeah. Be able to input
cloud cover,
that
all that kind of shit. Turbidity of the water. I mean, all that stuff.
The other thing you mentioned was you can't, like, it's hard to sketch on your phone.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's really stupid, but sometimes on long flights, I will draw really stupid photos on my phone and then airdrop them to other people on the flight. I was on a long flight with my family, and I drew a stick figure with huge tits.
Send it to your mom?
No, not to my mom. I airdrop it to strangers. So somebody's, you know, looking at their phone, and it says airdrop from iPhone. I specifically don't have my phone named after me. And they just open it, it's a stick figure with big tits. It says, I've got a huge problem or something like that. And that just, it cracks me up. But I hope that's relatively harmless. Maybe I'm an asshole. I'm sure I am, but whatever. Who cares? I make myself laugh. All right, let's wrap this show up. You got anything else, Dad? How much of a dipshit I am.
I don't know how we went from something as monumental as a leather-bound journal to you drawing a fucking stick titty. How did that get here?
Oh,
you
shit.
See what I deal with every day? by the way.
All right. let's end this one.
Yeah, let's.
All right. We'll see you guys next
week. Thank you. Hope you liked it. Hope it helps you out.